I think Microsoft is finally realizing, due to polling and customer feedback, that no matter how badly they want people to move to the cloud, it's just not going to happen at the pace they want.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the HIP Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Duby, Principal Technologist Americas at Semperis. If you've spent any time working with Active Directory, at some point or another, you've surely wondered about the people on the other side of the Microsoft fence, the PMs and developers and testers of the Active Directory product group. Even those of us that have been fortunate enough to interact with the team over the years wonder this, because at Microsoft, players regularly rotate in and out of product groups. The presence of my guest today on the HIP Podcast is a happy byproduct of a process that started 1 week shy of a year ago today, when I wrote a LinkedIn post titled, Happy Birthday, Active Directory. This post celebrated the remarkable fact that Microsoft's identity system was amazingly a quarter century old and yet more critical to organizations around the world than it's ever been. In it, I said something to the effect of, Microsoft has effectively abandoned AD. Now, this prompted a quick rebuttal from Linda Taylor, a very much active AD principal software engineer, essentially saying, we're not dead yet. This led to Linda and my guest today, Cliff Fisher, who at the time was senior technical program manager in the AD product group, speaking at our HIP conference last year, and ultimately to Cliff joining Semperis as a senior solutions architect at the beginning of the year, which allowed me to dragoon him into sitting down with me today. Welcome, Cliff.
Thanks, Sean. It's great to be here. I've been looking forward to this for a while.
So, Cliff, tell me about your journey, how you got from the very beginnings of your career and how you ended up in the Microsoft AD group. It must be quite a story.
Yeah, I started as a help desk admin for a healthcare company. Doing password resets and user creation for new users and disabling, you know, users who had left. Humble beginnings. Moved up through the ranks of support, moved in to system administrator roles in a few different companies. And then I joined Microsoft, first as a contractor, but on the AD team as a support escalation engineer. Spent several years in that role before moving up to a debug engineer. So I was moved from escalation support in the support team to being debug support and escalation support and sort of a de facto advisor, right, for the frontliners. And then in that role, I was debugging AD, and then I was submitting bugs to the product group, and I was justifying why these bugs needed to be fixed and what the customers were telling me and the impact and the outage that things would cause. The monetary impact that they would feel. And then I discovered that there was a new PM role opening up in the AD team and that no one else on my team wanted it. And I said, well, I mean, I've done the side of it where I can fix bugs. Now, if I can go to the side of it and help my friends who are still debugging AD get bugs fixed and explain better to the product group and the leadership why these bugs need to be fixed and why these features need to be in existence and why AD isn't dead, then that would be a win for all of us. So I applied for that role. I got it. And then I spent 4 years as the PM of AD in what was a kind of a dream role for someone who came from, you know, being a help desk admin.
Yeah, did you ever go back to remember any of your people back from your help desk admin and say, oh, by the way?
I still am friends with a few of them, you know, especially on LinkedIn and stuff. So they've seen it.
Yeah.
It's fun to go back and talk to those folks sometimes and just to talk about where the directions our careers have gone. Right.
That's cool. Well, let's get to the elephant in the room. Let's get this disposed of right off the bat. So what exactly is Microsoft's vision and support statement for Active Directory? Can you break the statement down into its parts?
Yeah, so I'll start with the statement itself, which is that Microsoft is committed to keeping Active Directory protected and productive in modern enterprise environments by investing in its security and supportability while also supporting our customers' transitions to cloud-based identity solutions And as you might guess, that was a very carefully crafted message with a lot of iteration and a lot of work. Because
you
it
were
does.
Involved in that, right?
I was a primary driver of the need for such a statement, because our customers did ask questions and did have statements like AD is dead or Microsoft doesn't seem to be investing. So I said, there are a few things that happened where I said, no, we need to get the word out there that Active Directory is still being developed and we're still fixing bugs and security issues and adding features. So to break it down to its individual components, commitment to keeping Active Directory protected and productive. Protected and productive is a mantra of Windows Servicing and Delivery, which is the org that I was in. They're the org that does Patch Tuesday. So if you think about the org that does Patch Tuesday, their primary goal is to keep our customers protected from security vulnerabilities and things like that, while keeping them productive, i.e. not introducing more bugs and crashing servers and things like that. So our commitment to keeping AD protected and productive in modern enterprise environments. So if you're on 2003, you know, we aren't going to be able to keep you as protected and productive as if you're on 2025. And the newer stuff that you're on, the better, more protected and productive you'll be. Investing in security, obviously, that's the number one priority for Microsoft is investing in security and protecting against vulnerability. Supportability. This is a big deal for a lot of AD admins. As you know, AD admins are getting older. There aren't as many new admins coming into the IT world that are studying Active Directory versus Entra and other newer, shinier, fancier technologies. So supportability is vital. We need to reduce the amount of time it takes to solve replication issues, solve account lockout issues, etc. Right. So security, supportability, and then we also want to support our customers' transition to cloud-based identity solutions. This shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. Microsoft's goal is to get more people on Azure or Entra. That has been the goal for 10 plus years. So we had to do both things. We had to keep AD up and running while also supporting our customers' transition to the cloud and their migration to the cloud.
Right. Okay. So yes, those very clearly spells out, hey, it's not going away. We recognize the importance of security, with or without statements from the chairperson of the Senate Intelligence Committee, helping you along the lines, and that'll come up a little bit later. but it does lead into. It leads into my question of how has Microsoft's stance towards on-premises versus cloud in general changed over time? And I have to add, from the outside, it is, I'm not sure what the right word is, remarkable is probably not the right word, that Microsoft should have embraced the cloud so entirely, wholly, and then seems to have, at the time, just almost forgotten that it existed, that the previous existence has gone forward. And obviously, it's driven by leadership and all of that. But to those of us in the outside, we never understood it and just always looked at it as incredible. And I know, but you've got some interesting stuff here in terms of what your polls have shown, and maybe you can shed some light on how Microsoft's stance changed. It has changed, but how it's changed and that sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely. So I was in support when that messaging started to happen of, oh, AD is dying, AD is dead, you need to move to the cloud, that's the future. And I was railing against that statement then because I was talking to customers who were, you know, very much telling me, that's not true. We aren't going to be off AD anytime soon, and we don't know how we can, frankly. Back then, that was 2014 to 2017 timeframe, when the road to the cloud migration document was not non-existent, basically. I would say that there was definitely a push to get everyone in the cloud. And as Microsoft, sometimes we used to sort of carry that mantle of we have to drag everyone into the future. And let's be honest, Azure Active Directory Entra Identity, as it's called now, was designed with 10 to 12 to 15 years maybe of on-premises AD learnings, and it was developed with those learnings in mind. So they fixed some security stuff out of the gate. They didn't use protocols that were as open, things like that. So there's no doubt that there's security in it, and the easiest way to get everyone secure is to get people all to the cloud. What they didn't realize, leadership at Microsoft at the time,
right,
in Entra, right, specifically, is that customers just aren't going to be able to absorb change at that rate, and especially at that cost. Shifting to the cloud is not cheap, and it requires monthly subscriptions as opposed to yearly or package deals with licensing. And then your data isn't necessarily yours anymore. It's in the cloud, right? And so for a lot of customers and governments, especially foreign governments, that was a big issue. And I think that leadership thought they could just push through that and show like, hey, it's so much better that it's a no-brainer for you to upgrade. But the reality is that customers are a customer's primary objective is to keep their business running and to make money. Most corporate enterprise, customers, their goal is to make money. And if they have to spend a bunch of money to keep their environment afloat, that's less money that they can go spend on making more money, right? And it's less time that they can spend making more money. So that's why a lot of companies don't upgrade immediately. The other reason a lot of companies don't upgrade immediately is, of course, needing to test things with their legacy applications, their legacy protocols, their, things like that. You'll have a factory that has an integration system that's based on 2008 or a 2008 equivalent OS. That factory equipment costs them millions of dollars. And maybe that vendor's gone. Maybe the vendor's out of business. So they can't just ask for a rewrite on modern OS using modern code. So there are a lot of reasons why people stay behind the times in their environments. I think we are finally,
it'll be a while.
I know it was happening to me in the solution architect meeting yesterday too. So there's an acceptance now around the company of, okay, hybrid is actually the place where people will be for 2, 3, 5, 10 years, maybe forever, depending on their dependence on-prem AD. And we did polling. The Entra team did some polling. We did some polling in 2020, and then we did some again last year. So our polling basically says 54% of people have the most workload in AD on-prem. 32% are 50-50. Only 10% have most of their workload in Entra ID. When we asked them how long it would take them to get to 50-50, 10% said it's going to be 20 years plus. And that was last year, right?
Right.
9% said 10 to 20 years. Only 38% of customers that we polled said, yeah, we'll be ready to be 50-50 Entra and AD on-prem split in 1 to 5 years. So, and that matches our polling from 2020 as well. You just saw a shift of the people who said 5 to 10 years are now saying 1 to 5. And some of the people that said 15 are saying 10, but the numbers were pretty close. So now we have like 6 years of polling data to say people aren't leaving on-prem AD soon enough. And so therefore we need to support both on-premise and cloud. The other parts of our polling that were interesting is just how many people are, how many forests and how many DCs people are running. Half of our environments are 2 to 5 forests. Only 20% of them are 1 forest. And then you can see 22% of environments are running 10 plus forests. And there's some really big customers in that 22% too. Number of DCs, again, most people over 50% are running under 100 DCs. But then you've got 7% of customers who are running over 1,000 DCs in their environment. And so you understand just how much supportability matters to our admins when they have to administer 1,000+ TCs at a time to keep their environment up and running.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at that, fully a quarter of the respondents are have more than 300 domain controllers. Those are big organizations with a capital B.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of people aren't just deploying DCs because it's fun, right? They're deploying them because they have a large exchange on-prem exchange environment that requires polling AD and for AD to be responsive. They have applications that are doing identity functions that have to be snappy and responsive. So it's just been a necessary thing for them to deploy more DCs.
It's interesting. It's an interesting observation because anecdotally, at least, you know, when AD first came out in the dawn of time, WAN links were very expensive. And so that's why AD has site topology, and that's why it's got all sorts of stuff to minimize traffic between network locations.
Yeah, and slow leak detection even.
Right, exactly. And now, you know, bandwidth is cheap. There's dark fiber laying around and all of that. But the example that you gave, where you still have on-premises applications that need snappy response, the best way to do that is to land a DC nearby.
That's right. That's right. And that actually has other effects too, because if you land a DC nearby, maybe that DC is, you know, in an area of a country or of a continent that doesn't have great internet connectivity or doesn't have constant access or even struggles with power, right? There are data centers in third world countries that some of the stuff still actually has to be used for. Is incredible. Yeah,
well, one of my favorite stories that anyone that's listened to me talk about, I talk about the Maersk attack by NotPetya. Yes. And the reason Maersk still exists is because there was a power failure in Accra, Ghana, in their branch office. So I might be overstating it a little bit, but that saved their bacon for sure.
Yeah, that's fair. And that's actually an escalation that I worked on a little bit when I was in support as well. I have stories from that too.
We'll have to have that an after hours conversation on that one.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. Well, this is interesting. So yeah, it took, as I said, an amazingly long time considering, but enough data eventually recognized. And I think about it from the outsider's view, these things always seem to, when we have a big shift, they always seem to swing one way than the other way. And in this particular case, it's everything's on-premise. Okay, great. Here's this thing called the cloud. Oh, we have two different types of configurations. You'll love one of them, I'm sure. And you'll go all the way to it. And then that didn't work. And they said, okay, well, let's take this cloud idea and let's put it on-premises and we'll call it private cloud. When's the last time you heard about private cloud? And now it's like, well, you know, maybe there's a room for both. And we have this thing called hybrid. And this is the world we're going to live in for a long time. So I guess it reassures me that the name of this podcast and the name of our conference is Hybrid Identity. Will continue to be good. So
that's right.
What's going on day to day in the Active Directory team? How large is it? What is its official name even?
We can start there. Yeah. So the official name of the AD team is really just the Active Directory dev team, Active Directory product group. We still call them product groups internally.
Okay.
It's sort of just generically AD. Now, just to give a little structure, we are inside WSD, as I mentioned, Windows Servicing and Delivery. Underneath that, there are sub-orgs. So there's the customer-focused engineering org. So we were part of that org. Under that org, there's the Windows Server subgroup. And then I was one of the six subgroups of that Windows Server group. So just the layers of structure in WSD, it's a three or four layers deep. But yeah, we just called ourselves the ADPG, the AD product group. We had multiple teams, and then we munched them all into one big team. And now it's just the Active Directory team. And then the Kerberos team
to say it correctly.
Yeah. And then the Kerberos team is a separate team. You know, they're the enterprise and security team. There's a bunch of other teams that do AD functionality besides the AD team.
So what's going on? What do you guys spend your days doing?
Yeah, so day-to-day work, the primary objective is to take care of security vulnerabilities. So if a critical or important vulnerability comes in, we have 3 to 4 months to fix those. We have an SLA on those. And then even for things that aren't critical or important, there's still an SLA now. And those are usually going into the next version of the product and then maybe back to Server 2025 and the latest version of Windows 11. So security requests are number one. Customer requests are number two. So bugs, features, things like that. Bugs that come through CSS or escalations are another priority. Partner requests. So for every customer request, we have internal partners, whether it be Exchange Online or M365 team, Substrate, MSIT would come to us with requests because they're running on-prem AD as well. So a lot of internal partners come to us with requests as well. In addition, there's Watson and telemetry. So there's tons of bugs that just come in through Watson that get filtered through, and then we're able to go pull mini dump data from those and get more info on trending trending crashes, trending errors that cause apps to crash, things like that. Feedback hub. So the feedback hub in the product is another place where people submit stuff. And then we get randomizers all the time. So the Active Directory team is sort of also, despite the fact that there are support staff, you know, for Active Directory at Microsoft, the AD product group is very much the de facto escalation path for anybody internally who's having Active Directory trouble. So if there's an Active Directory incident internally, like we're going to get notified, we're probably going to get pulled into that incident. So that's pretty much the day-to-day. And then, of course, as a PM, there's a lot of work on roadmap and strategy and coming up with the next products that customers are going to love. And then trying to figure out how we can hopefully make some money off of those products as well, because ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, Microsoft is a $3 trillion business that wants to keep making money. So.
Right. Well, that certainly fits into my definition of work is never finished at the end of the day, only abandoned.
That's right. There's
Well,
always something else to do. Always.
and you have shared with us that that you've put on head of the order of 1,200 security fixes since 2024. But
That's
I
right.
think it's interesting that across that same time frame, if I have it right, only about 10 plus DCRs over that time period. And for jargon watch, jargon alert, DCR is design change request, which is not just fixing the way something works, but a new way to make something work.
That's
Hey, I've
right.
got this great idea. Why don't we do this? So, I mean, this tells me, as you say, it's about fixing things the way it is. And it's much less about changing the way things work. But that leads into my next question, though, and both for security and for DCRs, is the complexity, how the complexity has gone up, as you've described to me over time, with a 25-year-old code base of, I can't, do you know how many millions of lines of code AD is?
I don't off the top of my head, no. And because it's so spread out, it's hard to really say like what's AD code versus another components.
Yeah, it's the ugliness underneath the shiny cover, right?
Yeah, I mean it's C89, it's C++, it's some C sharp. Like there's all sorts of stuff in the code base, and it goes back a long way. Yeah.
So explain to why how the complexity of working with fixing AD has gone up over time too.
Yeah, so I think first from the security vulnerability perspective, you know, a lot of vulnerabilities that will come in early in any product's lifetime are, you know, things that can be pretty easily fixed. Like, oh, this crashes because we didn't check for null in this variable, and so we touched the guard page, right? Or just it's low hanging fruit sort of stuff, or stuff that can be caught with fuzzing, which now is a thing that, you know, most Windows binaries, all Windows binaries, Windows at least. Get fuzzed.
What is fuzzing? Now, not being a developer, I don't know what that is.
Fuzzing is a way of randomizing inputs into a code base or an API that takes input and randomizing that input to test for vulnerabilities or write buffer issues. So think of like SQL injection attacks, but for any sort of any sort of text input or any sort of input at all that isn't trusted input, right? Fuzzing is a way to test surfaces for issues validating that input or processing.
Okay, both good guys and bad guys.
That's right. Yep, and good guys and bad guys are, well, who do you call the bad guys, right? Because some of the bad guys are actually the good guys trying to fix vulnerabilities, and then some of them are bad guys trying to, they're pen testers, or they're trying to exploit the vulnerabilities. So, yeah, so it's both. But that's definitely a focus at Microsoft development is fuzzing and just trying to make sure that some of that other low-hanging fruit that can be caught internally is caught, right? Mm-hmm. But as you go over time, to your point about how it's gotten more complicated, the attacks have gotten more complex. The ways these attacks are landing are more complex. The environments are getting more complex. As you increase attack surface by adding cloud endpoints and adding apps and adding more servers and more things outside and bring your own device, you increase the attack surface of your environment, right? So as your attack surface increases, the complexity of the attacks can increase as well. And a lot of that low-hanging fruit is now gone. So instead of going after small fixes to things that you can just check for null and be done, or do little buffer checks and things like that, now we're talking about design changes. We're talking about changing things that have been the way they are for 20 years. And anytime you change something that's been away for 20 years, you run the risk of breaking someone, because someone's relying on that behavior somewhere, especially at a company and in an environment as big as Microsoft, where there's 1.5 billion devices running Windows. You are going to break someone if you change 20-year-old norms. But at the same time, some of those 20-year-old norms have to change because they are just not secure for modern environments. And so sometimes the complexity of that causes issues. The complexity of customer environments can cause issues. Microsoft, despite all the telemetry that they are collecting, they still don't have the best insight into customer environments necessarily, unless people are asking or getting to know those environments. So when we make a change like the domain join hardening change that we made a few years ago, we designed that. We spent months designing it. I think we had a 4-month SLA.
Can you explain what the domain join hardening was all about?
Yeah, so domain join hardening came about because effectively what you could do is create a computer, and if you have certain access to create computer objects like MSDS machine account quota, which allows you to create up to 10 machines and join them to a domain, or other access like create child access on computers, OU, things like that, you can create an object. When you create that computer object, you're the owner of that object. As the owner of that object, you have a ton of access to that object. You have full control of that object because you're the owner. So if you can predict things like the name of the next DC, and then you can go create a computer and join it to the domain that's called, you know, Sean's DC 10, because you have DC 1 through 9 already, and that's easily available through LDAP, right? You do an LDAP query, say, oh, there's 1 through 9, 10's next. I stand up 10. I retain ownership to that. When someone reuses that computer account, you're still the owner of that account. Even if they join it, even if they promo to DC, you are still the owner of that computer account, which means you have access to attributes. Like, you can set SPNs, and you can change passwords, and you can do all sorts of stuff. Well, if you have owner control of a DC, you are a domain admin.
Right.
You are system on a DC.
Right.
So account reuse, which has been a thing that's been used for 20, 25 years, people are used to account reuse working a certain way. And we had to break how that worked to fix this vulnerability. So necessarily, we went through several iterations of that fix, and we even released a few that didn't quite catch everything. We did polling, and the poll we went we did polling on whether our initial solution was would work. We got like an 80-20 response saying like, yeah, this should be fine. Turns out that 20%, that was a lot of like big enterprise customers that couldn't reuse machine accounts, couldn't join machines to domains, things like that. So we went through a few iterations and we finally ended up putting in an allow list for certain accounts to rejoin computers no matter what, to reuse computer accounts that are existing computer accounts, right? So if you have an IDM solution or a deployment solution that requires that's going to join the computers to the domain, well, now you can just add that service account and say, hey, I trust the service account. We're monitoring it. We've got all the, it's in tier zero, or it's, you know, it's secure and we trust it to be doing these domain joins and to right. be owning computer accounts.
Right.
So we did that. We added the admins group so the admins can do it by default. We did a few other things, just some tweaks based on customer feedback and bugs and escalations, right? And it's finally now, 2 years after we released the initial fix, it is now, or was as of 2024, middle of 2024, it's pretty well fixed to where if you need exceptions, you can implement them as a domain admin in your environment or as an enterprise admin in your environment, and otherwise you're protected. And but that's the sort of iteration that has to happen when we have these really complex these really complex vulnerabilities that we are now considering vulnerabilities. That's the other thing, is the bar for what's a vulnerability changes over time, right? And the bar for what is fixed and where changes over time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you remind me of a conversation I had with a PM on the AD team back in probably Windows Server 2012 timeframe. And he said he related the complexity of making changes to such a widely deployed product is similar to ordering pizza for a million people. You know, everybody wants yes. something a little bit different, and everybody's yes. going to complain that, you know, there's always going to be a significant minority of people that are complaining because you don't have pineapple on the pizza.
Right. That's right. Or olives or something else that I would like never eat on a pizza, but people love. Right. And it speaks to the other thing we talked about in that conference, which was like releasing a new version of Windows versus releasing.
Yes.
Windows or really release a new version. Yeah. Versus Patch Tuesday. When we release a new version of Windows, there's a bunch of really enthusiastic people that absorb that content, or they're absorbing Windows Insider's builds and they're testing things and they're playing. A lot of those people work for Semperis, actually.
And I have a long background in that, and then also covering those changes as a journalist.
That's right. Yeah. And so you have to know what's changing, and then you have to know how it works, and then you have to know, like, if there are there bugs, are there issues with integrating into old environments, et cetera.
Yeah. What do you need to be aware of?
Right. Exactly.
But as you say, that's a very small group of people compared to the bajillion people that just wanted to keep working.
That's right. So when we release new versions, we have a group of very passionate people testing, but not everyone's testing. So think about scale. When you have a million people testing your release on week one, like you do with Patch Tuesday, or and a millions of, I'm just throwing a number out there, right?
Sure.
When you have a bunch of people testing the Patch Tuesday releases within a week, you're going to get more testing and more feedback than when you release a new version of Server and only the really enthusiastic people are playing. Now, the enthusiastic people are going to file bugs and they're going to help you figure out problems.
Right.
But the scale and the types of environments they're getting deployed into are not the same as Patch Tuesday. A lot of times when people are testing new versions, they're deploying in a lab, they're deploying in a smaller environment, they don't want to break their whole world, so they're playing in very small sandboxes, which then, of course, is not production. So when they put stuff into production, different things happen.
Right. This is the, yeah.
Exactly.
All of us that have worked in IT are very familiar with that. And one of the things I like about this conversation is it sort of shows a little insight into you think you here on-prem in your organization are concerned about releasing these changes. Imagine what it's like in the whatever the war room is for the patch Tuesday to say, okay, we're going to release this and it's going to go to 1.5 billion endpoints. Everybody grab somebody somewhere presses a button.
Yeah, knock on wood and pray and you know, eat your Patch Tuesday bagel and hope everything goes well.
Well, and to be fair, too, I mean, it used to be a lot rockier than it is now, too. It's gotten a lot better. And that's the reason that, for example, WSUS was invented, because yeah. Nobody wanted to take stuff directly from Microsoft. And I don't know, and I don't know if you have that information. Anecdotally, it seems like more and more people are comfortable with just taking the release, especially when there's security fixes that come out.
I think there are more people comfortable with taking the release on client machines. There's a very big difference in the perception client versus server patching. I'll just say that. I don't know how deeply we want to talk about that necessarily, but I think clients are more, people are a little less scared to deploy. Servers, obviously, they want to test a lot harder with servers before they deploy patches on servers, because that's where your apps are running and that's where your business critical stuff is happening.
Yeah, you break an OS on a client, you've broken one person.
Yes, exactly.
You break an OS on a server, it's a different thing.
Yeah, you have an outage. Yeah.
So, what in your tenure, what are some of the most important changes to come out of the team? And I know you have a few that you're proud of that give you a chance to, number one, say what they are, and number two, encourage people that are listening to this to actually use them.
That's right. Yeah. I would say that the biggest thing by far for me, and I think really for a lot of the team, is Windows Labs. And I have to say, Jay Simmons, who worked on Windows Labs, is just a beast. He worked on that integration of Windows Labs into the OS for several years, and that release was a really big deal for us. So
can you explain what Windows Labs is and what's different from, because Labs has been out there, but so
legacy Labs, as we're calling it now, is the original Labs local admin password solution. It would set passwords and then allow you to see what the password was that was set on the machine, and then you could roll them and things like that. Basically, so that you didn't have to have the same local admin password plastered across your entire fleet, which in my first job is exactly what we did. We had one password, it got distributed to the whole fleet, and you had to use SneakerNet to go get that password. SneakerNet meaning you got up off your butt and you walked over to the admin who pushed the password out and you had him tell you the password, right? That was how that worked back in 2007 or whatever. But now Microsoft Labs was created by the consulting team and the PFEs as like a solution for rolling those passwords and keeping people's local admin passwords secure. It was a out-of-band binary, which meant you had to download a separate MSI. You had to install it. You had to make schema changes. There's all sorts of, like, it was basically an out-of-box add-on to Windows, but made by Microsoft. Well, one of the things that we wanted to do, and one of the things we heard from customers a lot, is, A, this should be a part of Windows. This should be a part of AD, Windows, whatever you want to call it. Pull it into the OS. Don't make us go download this, you know, this old MSI that may or may not be updated. We don't know. Give it to us in Windows. Let us install it directly. And the other thing people were asking for is, hey, as an Entra ID user, I can't use Labs right now. So I can't move to Labs. My company won't move to Entra until Labs works in the cloud. And so we were able to use that as the story in combination with the Entra identity team to get Labs, to get funding for Labs, to get it developed and get it, you know, tested and pushed out the door. Windows Labs has now been out, I think, for three and a half years, maybe a little more. And then we released some updates for Server 2025 that helped bolster, and add some new features. I think that's by far the biggest thing, because, I mean, there are governments around the world that require you to use Labs. There's all sorts of security guidance that says you need to be using Labs. And for a whole bucket of customers who were trying to move to the future to not be able to use Laps was a really bad, was a problem. So I'm really proud that we were able to get that landed, get it shipped. It unblocked a ton of companies and to millions of seats, and it was a good play for Microsoft. But it was also vital that on-prem customers to us, it was vital that on-prem customers got benefit from that too. So we built on-prem function and capability into it. A couple other things that we've done, account lockout policy expansion so that admins can be locked out now. That's a big brute force protector. SID to name translation. We've done a lot of stuff in the back end to make weird insecure defaults secure where we can, which you can't do everywhere, right? We can't go in and change your machine account quota because that's a forest wide setting, and we're just not going to go tweak that for you in an update, right? But managed service accounts is another thing that we've been working on, GMSA, DMSA.
Right.
LDAP. Securing LDAP, getting LDAP encryption and signing, channel binding, all that stuff enabled. RC4 is going to be going away. All the old crypto is going away. There's a push to AES. NTLM is now going away, as you know. That will be a probably a little bit longer term of a project. But a lot of the old stuff, there's been a push to finally just say, hey, sorry, this old stuff is insecure and it's got to go. And that's been really nice to see and to help usher along.
Yeah, the RC4 issue moving to AES, I know that we have something early on in the works to assist people that find themselves in that situation. Maybe it's worth just a short summary of what that's about and what's that's happening in case people listening to this haven't heard about it.
Yeah. So RC4 is going away. It is unsecure. It needs to go. It's part of why Kerber roasting is still a thing, right?
It's so easy. It's so easy to crack it.
It's so easy. It's a trivial thing, especially in the age of cloud computing and very fast machines and smartphones that are as fast as the computers that used to be in existence 25 years ago, right? It's a really important thing for us to start getting rid of those technologies that are now so old and vulnerable that they're just so easy to crack and to exploit that they just got to go. So RC4 is going away. AES will be the minimum. AES 128 will be the minimum encryption moving forward at some point. I don't know exactly when yet. But it's going away. This isn't one of those things where they're saying it and then it's not going to happen and all that, they're going to kick the can down the road. It's happening, and the team is working really hard on it. And so everyone needs to be aware that's listening to this podcast or watching this podcast that if you've got RC4 still going on in your environment, the time is the clock is ticking for that stuff to go away. Right. They aren't going to let it go on forever.
This is not something that you can ignore and say it doesn't apply to me. This is falling into that pizza for a million people thing. You know, and I'm sure you're cursing the fact that you're not in the product group right now, it's going to break people. People, it doesn't matter how much shouting you do, it's going to break a lot of people.
It is.
And hopefully, if you're listening to this podcast, you'll take action or watch this podcast, take action, and it won't be a thing.
Yeah, keep your ear to the ground on RC4 and NTLM because, oh my gosh, it's moving way faster than I ever would have guessed.
That's great because I am looking for recommendations for our listeners. So we've got pay attention to RC4.
Yep.
Windows Laps.
Windows Laps.
From an attack kill chain viewpoint, very, very popular with Mimikatz or whatever is a threat actor gets administrative rights on a client. If you've got the same administrator password on this client than the other client, if it isn't quite game over, it's about to be game over. So
I will tell you that Microsoft considers it game over. If you have physical access to a DC and you're able to dump the DIT, it's over. Like your forest is compromised at that point. It sort of colors some of the security decisions too, right? Is that idea of if you have physical access to something, you own it.
Right. Yeah, I was sort of referring to the propagation and reconnaissance chain, if you get a PC endpoint and you get admin access to that endpoint, you could go to any other endpoint because you know the admin password is going to be the same.
That's right. That's right. It gives you lateral movement within that environment for you to go find other holes to poke at and other seams to rip.
So just to sort of wrap it up, Cliff, I mean, if you have any closing thoughts off the top of your head, anything that, you know, we've kind of talked about some takeaways and things like that, what would you want to leave our viewers with?
Yeah, I think I want to leave viewers with the idea that Microsoft is very much still investing in Active Directory. It may not be at the level that they're investing in Entra or in other technologies or Copilot or any of that stuff, but Microsoft is very much still investing in Active Directory. They are not only just doing security fixes, they are looking for new features. They're looking for customer feedback on things that will be impactful for you in the future. Security, supportability, and cloud upgrade are the three primary areas that they want to focus on. And I would say there is an understanding now that hybrid is here to stay for the foreseeable future. There's still going to be a push to cloud. And frankly, cloud is very secure in a lot of ways because it was built to be that way, whereas AD was not built with a lot of these lessons in mind. However, if you're keeping your ear to the ground and you're paying attention to what Microsoft is releasing as far as NTLMless, RC4, the things that are coming out of the security team, I think you're going to be in great shape. And I think there's still a horizon of 15 plus years where Active Directory will still be supported and in the Windows product, at least.
Well, thank you, Cliff. It's a fascinating conversation, and I know, you know, our watchers will really enjoy it as well. Thanks for your time, and welcome to Semperis.
Thanks. It's great to be here, and looking forward to what we can get up to together.